Luis Severino made his spring training debut for the Mets. We got Christian Scott and Mike Vassell on the mound. Brandon Nimmo made his debut. Starling Marte is playing some pretty good baseball. A lot of stuff that happened this past weekend. Let's talk about it.
Today's episode is sponsored by Aura. Are you tired of receiving spam phone calls to the point where you don't even want to answer your phone anymore? That's because data brokers sell your information to scammers and spammers and anybody else who may want to target you. That's right. Your full name, your home address, your health records. It's all out there. That's why we've been using Aura. Aura shows you which data brokers are selling your information and automatically submits opt-out requests on your behalf. Not only does this stop scammers and hackers from getting and using your information, but also protects you from them using that information to get into your social media accounts or bank accounts too. Aura is always on duty, looking to keep you safe so you can focus on anything else you need to focus on with peace of mind. So stop data brokers from exposing your personal information to that and visit our sponsor at aura.com/metsedup. That's aura.com/metsedup to get a 14-day free trial and see how much of your data is being sold. We value privacy here in the Met Stub podcast, and there's no better way to ensure your safety online than by using Aura. Thank you, Aura, for sponsoring today's episode.
What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets Up Podcast. We got a little bit of spring training baseball to talk about. Like you heard in the intro, Luis Severino making his spring training debut. We got to see some of the prospects. Tidwell, Christian Scott, Mike Vassell on the mound for some meaningful innings as well. Jose Budo getting in there. Sean Manaea as well getting back on the mound. And then Marte, Brandon Nimmo. Those guys made their debut as well this weekend. Or no, Marte played a little bit earlier. But they're playing baseball, so a lot of good stuff to talk about here. You know, on the Messed Up Podcast, we love to just talk about every little thing that goes on, and that's exactly what you're going to get. Make sure you follow us on all our social media, at Messed Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Subscribe to the Messed Up Podcast YouTube channel if you want to see the video version of this. And if you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, not that company, not shouting them out. Drop us a rating, drop us a review, download, and subscribe. James, what's going on, man? We've had a couple nights the last few, a little late.
Couple nights, but Sunday was beautiful. This was like the first spring has sprung day, and something I noticed greatly hanging out around Brooklyn, Williamsburg, Greenpoint today, lots of Mets hats. Nice. I saw so many Mets hats around the city today. It was amazing. And then I was taking a walk with one of my friends just like around the block, just chit-chatting, catching up, and we walked past this like nice, quiet little street nestled in the corner of Greenpoint. And like from the end of the street, we saw a garage open, some guys in some nice lawn chairs hanging outside. We're like, okay, this seems like a good vibe, something good to look at. About 7-8 old dudes, a lot of white hair, a lot of like cut off sleeveless shirts, but like barrel chested men, Peronis, two boxes of pizza, and SNY, Mets game, spring training in the corner. Pizza, nice. Beer, baseball, that's what spring's all about.
That really is. I mean, listen, if we didn't go out the last two nights, I think I would have been about pizza, beer, and Mets baseball today as well. But we need a little break. A little break on the gut is not a problem. We did also indulge in so much Korean meats last night, which was phenomenal. Shout out John Groh.
Yeah, shout out. Any restaurant, we have a good time. We're going to shout them out on the podcast, always. Free. We will give free ads if we like your food. But
of course.
A lot of Mets stuff to talk about from the weekend. A lot of Mets stuff in our context. Not really a lot of Mets stuff really in the scope of the world. No. But we got some pitching performances. I'm very excited to talk about Luis Severino, Blade Tidwell, Christian Scott, Mike Vassell, Jose Budo got back on the mound. Sean Manaea and Adrian Hauser were not very good at all. Guys were actually in the rotation, but that's so much less fun than the guys who might be in the rotation who actually do look pretty good.
So where do you want to start off? Severino, is that where we want to go? I feel like that's the big name right now.
Yeah, Severino's the big name, and he's the one guy who we like were able to actually watch on TV and have the data that backed it up. Because like Saturday, you guys know how much I really wanted to watch Christian Scott and Mike Vassell, but it's just like watching on the Marlins press broadcast from like behind the plate in the mezzanine, it was like, this is painful. But had radio, Howie, Keith Rad, Pat McCarthy, and it's just like getting all the Statcast data that was still worth it. But Severino on Friday, I think it was a really encouraging debut, and all Mets fans should be encouraged by this. He got up to 97.8 on the fastball, pretty good. Shape, not elite, but like pretty good, significantly better than it was last year. We kind of wound up in like a dead zone with his four-seam fastball. It's a big reason why his year spun out of the whack. His slider is still awesome. Savant said he was throwing it harder and with less break, but I think that's just like it's spring training for baseball Savant too, so pitch recognition. I think he just grabbed a couple cutters and thought they were sliders and mashed them together. So that made it look like he was throwing it harder with less break. Really, there's probably just two distinct pitches being thrown. And something that was really cool, changeup. Severino talked about the changeup this offseason. A video of him at Driveline went viral because he was just working on changeups and looked disgusting. And it really looked really good again on Friday. He only threw five of them, and it was down a whole mile an hour compared to last year, but it had 6 more inches of drop and 3 more inches of arm side fade. So that's 9 extra inches of movement on this pitch compared to last year when he was throwing with the Yankees. And last year when he was throwing the Yankees, the pitch was not good. It was a below average pitch in terms of movement, in terms of velocity, everything. It was just kind of been a useful weapon for him to just have something different than the fastball and the slider, something just moved in a different way at a different speed, just like existing, he thought was helping him. But if this looks like a big change, and this movement profile makes it look like it's actually probably a plus pitch, huge thing for him to add to his toolbox.
Yeah, I mean, super encouraged with what we saw again. It's going to be like little baby steps with him as we go through spring and picking out those little nuggets that make you hopefully believe that Luis Severino can be someone that's going to be very useful in this rotation. But like you said, seeing that 97, 98 mile an hour fastball, that was the thing that I was the most excited about, just because like the live arm is still there. Early in spring, only going to get stronger, hopefully, as the season goes on. And if we want Luis Severino to even come close to returning to form, he's going to need that fastball to be in that elite level.
Totally. But that was also something that he never lost last year. As bad as shit got, like he still was 96, 97, got to 98. It was all the other stuff that was ruining him. And one of the big things that was ruining him was that fastball shape. It still had the velocity, but there was just something about the way he was throwing it. It was just coming in flat. It was getting a little too much run on it, where he used to have that like nice popping fastball.
Yeah.
That would just get up on you. So what he did last year, and he expanded on that on Friday again, was start throwing more sinkers. I don't know if I really like this, but again, I kind of trust what the Mets coaches, what Jeremy Hefner and Severino are doing internally right now. And he introduced the sinker Severino last year, like towards the end of the summer, again, when the fastball was dead. You couldn't get anybody out. No one was swinging and missing at it. He just needed to do something to get batters out. And the Yankees brought the sinker on slowly. And the Yankees have been kind of notorious for sinkers, I think, in baseball the last few years, as the pitch has really been revived, where it was like, it was the biggest pitch like 20 years ago. And then everyone was like, we just want to throw hard fastballs to make people swing and miss. But now these last like, couple of years, I think the Yankees have kind of catalyzed it, where sinkers are kind of becoming cool again, for lack of a better term. And he threw a little bit the last 5-6 starts of the year last year, and then by his last 2 starts of the year, he was throwing a 10-12%. So it was a legitimate pitch in his repertoire, and Friday was the pitch he threw the most. So I think that's probably partially spring training working on stuff, but also probably like the fastball shape again was fine, but it's not going back 2017 Luis Severino. So it's just having another wrinkle for hitters. And if anyone wants to like really get into the weeds for spring training data, I would definitely recommend you guys checking out someone on Twitter, TJ Stats, Thomas Nestico. He gets deep and deep and deep. He has his own stuff plus mile that grades out pretty well. It looks like it's reasonably comparable to the other ones. And he's pumping out all the spring training stuff every single day. And he said that the sinker graded out just below average and stuff plus. His fastball was just about average. So not that much of a difference in terms of where those pitches are stuff-wise, but just having two distinct ones, another tool in the bag, always helps.
Yeah, and I think, too, with Severino, like you mentioned, like the swing and miss issues or whatever that he was having last year, having a hard time putting away guys, this sinker could definitely be that pitch to try and maybe get like a quicker out, get an easier out, allows him to go longer in the game without theoretically throwing as many pitches, trying to work for that strikeout. We've seen pitchers do this in the past as well. Like if you can get the strikeout, way better, obviously. But if you're having difficulties, like you said, with that fastball, getting that swing and miss, this sinker still gives you, or sinker, not stinker, sinker gives you that, sneaky there, gives you that ability to still like throw like a fastball, but get outs.
Yeah, I think another part of it is probably the fact that he's now going to pitch in a stadium mostly that where you're not that afraid of contact, where when you're pitching in Yankee Stadium, you kind of want to run away from contact. Like you can now throw some sinkers and kind of let guys put it around the yard and let like a very revamped infield and outfield defense be able to make the plays on that. Whereas in Yankee Stadium, like my goal would always be to not let bat touch ball. Garrett Cole actually did go away from that last year because he started throwing cutter for the first time in his career and helped him win the Cy Young, but also his strikeouts went way down. So I don't know. There's a lot of push and pull with this stuff, but that's what these like first few weeks of spring training are all about. Like see what you have, see what you're working on, see if that works. Maybe it doesn't. Try that one the other way. Because like the sinker still isn't really going to help him against lefties, which was the big problem. Like I don't want Luis Severino throwing sinkers to lefties. Like that just has to be fastball changeups and maybe the slider sharp enough or maybe the cutter's in a spot where you can get to them. But again, every single thing we saw, I would be very encouraged by high velocity, better changeup, and still a very good slider.
Keeping it in guys that are going to be in the rotation for sure. Sean Manaea made an appearance on Saturday, right? Saturday?
Saturday,
because Hauser pitched today. My days are all messed up. Manaea didn't look great, but here's what I respect about Sean Manaea. Baseball guy. Pitched poorly in spring training, cut the hair. Immediately gone. He's got short hair like me and James right now. He just completely changed his look in spring training after a bad start. He's like, done. He apparently hasn't gotten a haircut in 4 years, I think is what said.
Really?
4 years. And now he's got the close cut, the clean look. I like it. I'm about it. That was something that we talked about jokingly with Cody Bellinger when he just shaved his head after like growing out the hair a little bit. We're like, that's a baseball move right there. Like, the guy's willing to do anything to get better. And I like seeing Sean Manaea do that.
Yeah, changing stuff up. We always hear how insanely superstitious these guys are. And even like talking to some of them the last few years, like, it's very real how superstitious a lot of these players are. But Manaea, something else funny is he shaved the beard totally down. And you can so hardcore see the beard tan line on his face. That's something I've always been horrified about for shaving my beard. Because I've had a beard in some degree on my face. We're going on like basically a full decade at this point.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So I guess Manaea was probably, like you said, 4 or 5 years. I'm terrified to take it off. My skin's just pale and this is tan. I'm like, I can't walk around like this now.
You're totally going to have like little baby skin. Like, it's going to be like crazy what it would look like.
That's what I'm saying. But again, appreciate Manaea because all the pitches looked bad. Like, his velocity was down. Like, it was just, maybe again, this is like a start to work on stuff, but it looked very bad. And that, again, it's March 3rd. You guys listening to this on March 4th. He pitched on March 2nd. We're not so much caring about results right now. We're much more concerned with like process and what guys are doing that could actually make them better pitchers. And Manaea, maybe for him, it's shaving the hair and loosening up. Handsome guy, fully cleanly shaved with the hair short, I gotta say.
Honestly, like, could be your cousin, I feel like. Could be a Shiano.
I think we look a little similar. I think he's Samoan, though, no? Hawaiian?
Yeah, I believe so as well. I don't think he's got Italian in him.
But yeah, we still like it. And just hopefully he gets better. Just get another start in there. I wouldn't hold 2 innings of bad spring training results against a guy.
No. And same thing with Adrian Hauser. Today, we didn't get any of the numbers on him yet, right? I believe, because there was the rain also was a little bit weird, too, with the Mets game. But Hauser did not pitch well against the Astros. Watching the game, it looked like the wind was blowing out. Like, the balls were just kind of just flying a little bit. And seems like he just got hit. That's going to happen with Adrian Hauser, too.
Yeah, the one thing with Hauser I think that was interesting is that it was all sinkers and sliders, and the Astros actually didn't even make contact with a single one of his sliders. He didn't throw very many in the zone either, just didn't seem very sharp, but they were just putting that sinker in play, and the fastball, I think he threw a couple of them, but one of them got smoked. His velocity was down, but Hauser's another guy where it's not, I don't know, this isn't really much of a concern. Like, he's here to be a metronome. He's a feel guy too, where it's like, and we said this when he was acquired, like, as a feel guy, the days where you don't feel it, you're going to get smoked, because if your command's a little bit off, if your movement's a little bit off, like, you don't have the stuff to get by guys and make mistakes and it'd be okay. If you're off, you're off. But he's on, he'll be on. There'll be one time this year Adrian Hauser goes 8 scoreless. I guarantee you it happens exactly once. There'll be about 4 or 5 times this year. What month? June.
June, okay. June.
8 scoreless like in that. June, Adrian Hauser, messed up podcast, watch it happen. But there'll also be like 4 or 5 times at least where he is out of the game in the third inning with 5 runs on the board. It's just going to happen.
Oh, for sure.
And it's all going to wind up as like a 4-4 ERA by the end of the year and probably 140 innings, but it might not be that fun to get there.
All right, let's talk about the fun guys now, though. Now the guys that you've been waiting to talk about.
One more point. Adrian Hauser, after the start today, was wearing the classic shirt with Doc and Daryl and Mike Tyson with the punch. Yeah. So that's a Mets guy right here. Someone's excited to be part of the franchise.
I like that. Just embracing the Mets culture, not the low Mets culture. All right, now the exciting guys. Let's talk about my guy first. Let's talk about Blade Tidwell, because I had been like so excited when the Mets drafted Blade Tidwell. They got him in the second round. He was my number one pitcher in the draft that year. Before the Mets even got him, so before anyone says, oh, you're just Mets biased, he's on the team, all of a sudden he's great, was a huge fan of him, and the big reason was heavy fastball. And you got to watch him, and what did you tell me, James? What was the first thing he said?
It's a heavy fastball.
Yeah, heavy fastball. I mean, he just, the way that Blade throws and how big he is and the shoulders and everything, he just comes on such a downward plane, like he really fires and rocks at you. And it just, when we say heavy fastball, the idea is that it's really hard to lift. It like hits the glove heavy. It sounds like deep. It sounds like he's throwing a heavier baseball than he actually is.
It's a bizarre pitch that I've been trying to categorize. I was talking to a friend of the podcast, someone you met last year, my guy Alex Isert, who wrote for Fangraphs. He's with the Blue Jays now, and his whole thing last year research-wise was seeking out unique pitches. He wrote a great article about Senga and the Ghost Fork originally, and like, he ranked every single pitch in baseball by its uniqueness, and Senga's had like the 9th most unique pitch in baseball. Like, he's a really good writer if you get into like nitty-gritty baseball research. He wrote, what was it? I think he wrote his master's thesis about like the concept of tunneling, and that's like, I read a part of it because like, it was so over my head, but it's like not as true as it's made out to be. But it's just like, it was a concept that late break actually doesn't exist. It's just how good you can tunnel a pitch. That's what gives a perceived late break. So he's a freak. I was talking to him about genius, about how they kind of try and characterize his heavy fastball, because it's just like, it's something that never grades well in these stuff models. But I looked in it, like I took the fastballs that Blade was throwing. Again, got these stats from my guy TJ Stats, Thomas Destico, on Twitter, because he has vertical approach angles, horizontal approach angle, his release height, his extension, the velocity, the carry, the IVB, all this stuff. And it's like, it wasn't really like any other right-handed pitchers fastballs I could find in the league, but it was like some left-handed pitchers fastballs. But I took the right-handed fastballs it was like, and the one it was most similar to was Derek Law. Doesn't really, not known for throwing a good fastball, but he's not as big of a guy as Blade, so it's a little different. He's even, Derek Law's kind of a big guy.
Doesn't he come a little side? Derek Law?
I think you're thinking of Jabeau.
Okay.
Derek Law is an over-the-top guy, but then lefty, and it also came out similarly as Nick Pavetta's, but Nick Pavetta's has much more backspin, much more carry and on it.
He definitely is like a downhill guy.
Yes, he's an over-the-top guy. And then it was also really similar from the left side to fastballs that grayed out so much better. Danny Colombe, who's one of the best left-handed relievers in the league in the Orioles, and Cole fucking Reagans, who's taken the whole league by storm. In 3 months, Cole Reagans is going to be the best pitcher in the league or back on the operating table, and there's nowhere in between for him. But like this, this pitch is, again, never going to grade well. It has that steep approach angle. He throws it straight up. He's throwing at 98 miles an hour. And when you're throwing that pitch 98 miles an hour with that steep angle, with that carry, you're almost like, it almost feels sinker-ish to me because he's throwing it low in the zone. I think it plays better low in the zone as well because that's how it gets on these hitters better. Totally. And there wasn't a lot of hard contact on him either. The only ball that was hit hard, I think it was a Jordan Walker triple right before Blade left the game, which was on a two-strike changeup, just called a little too much plate. But I want to talk to Alex. I know he's very busy working right now, but I want to try and like characterize this heavy fastball thing and find other guys like this because this pitch gets such bad grades in the stuff Miles plays fastball. It's like a well below average pitch because it just doesn't have good IVB. But then guys don't square it up. That's what I'm saying. It's this thing that's like a shift in where like scouts' eyes have pitches and where the models have pitches. And it has to be somewhere in between.
It's a little bit of old school versus like what you're now learning in like the new school of how to build a fastball, because this is the way that he throws that fastball is very much like old school, like big guy on the mound, throw the ball down because they can't hit it up. Like if you come from a higher spot than they're going to be hitting it from, they can't hit the ball in the air. And I think that's kind of what makes Blade super interesting is that fastball. And the other pitchers are also pretty good as well for Blade.
That's the cool thing about Blade. And we talked a lot about this happened last year. Tim Healy wrote in a great article that Blade like went to the pitching lab and revamped the whole arsenal. And I think a big reason for that was because of the uniqueness of his fastball. And the big thing that people always say pitching development is like, if you can learn pitches, you can learn pitches. But your fastball, you're almost kind of born with it. Like, that's just the way you throw. Like, that's going to be your fastball. You can't really change a fastball. Sometimes you can get more backspin on it. I know a lot of teams are doing a lot of, like, biomechanics stuff, like getting those fastballs great. Like, whatever the Astros did with Christian Javier last year, that was voodoo witchcraft. Like, I don't know how they did that. And if other teams knew how to do that, I'm sure they would. And I'm sure they're actively trying to replicate that. And same with Justin Verlander's fastball when he went back there. But I think the Mets did a lot to create a repertoire for Blade Tidwell around this, again, this strange fastball. And he threw six different pitches in his appearance on Friday. The fastball, a cutter, a sinker, a changeup, a curveball, and a slider. And that slider was the kind of one that was like kept like jumping out to me as a pitch that was really good. It was very gyro-ish where it was just kind of dropping hard down, but they had a little more movement than I think most gyro sliders had. He threw some nice ones with Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, Nolan Arenado. And it was just like, that was a pitch that I was watching. Like, this is a major league pitch. And I was talking to our friend of the show, Matt Eddie, about it too. And he's like, he's probably a little less bullish on Blade Tidwell, especially just, again, this fastball shape is something that you're like, I don't know if you could build a stars arsenal around it. But he said the whole thing reminded him a little bit more of Familia with the sinker. It was a different pitch, but just the fact that he's like coming down at you, he's like a big guy in the mound. It's like the shape's never going to be great, but the velocity could be overwhelming. And Blade did get to 98. That velocity was overwhelming. The slider and the cutter were really good. The changeup and the curveball, I think, were totally acceptable. The sinker was also weird, but I think that's just kind of him with like, I want a different shape because I don't think either of these pitches are good, so I'm just going to throw some variation with it. And I think the way that he also went about this outing was something that I liked a lot. I'm trying to add more pitching analysis into the way guys act on the mound, the way guys respond to adversity, like things like that I think are very important on like when you're pitching in a baseball game.
And we've taken Matt's test.
Yeah, more or less a Stephen Matz test. I think we've taken too much pitching analysis. Now there's so much data available publicly. Everything is way too, what's the word I'm looking for? Everything's way too theoretical. It's like, I have these three pitches, I can do this. Like Nick Pollock from Pitcherless has really helped me like see this more so, like what happens on a field. And Blade gave up a lot of soft contact. A lot of the balls found holes that probably shouldn't. And then Paul Goldschmidt hits a nubber off the handle of his bat or the knob of his bat to Pete. And Pete and Blade kind of converge on the ball. And Blade freezes for a second. And Pete's like, go cover first. And he's like, oh my God, yeah, I got to cover first. So then second, he gets there, actually beats him by a step. He gets there. Now there's two out, just one out, second and third, already a run home. And Nolan Gorman, Nolan Arenado were coming up. And Blade, a guy who's never pitched in the majors before, I think he's a ripe 22 years old. He's a year and a half off the SEC. He stands in there after a meeting from Jeremy Hefner and he strikes out Gorman and Arenado, where it's like, that's a moment where there's adversity, there's chaos. He kept his head high. He refocused on what he had to focus on. He dug deep and he got the outs he had to get. And there's a lot, again, in terms of fastball shape and all this stuff, maybe back end potential, maybe reliever risk that's talked about a lot with Blade Tidwell's future. But being able to do that the first time he's ever worn a uniform that said Mets on it, I thought was very cool and made me encouraged and hopeful.
Blade did some big stuff like that. Like you said, the pitches and stuff, you can break that down, but the makeup and the feel of what he's got on the mound That's the SEC difference right there. Talk about the best conference in all of sports. You know who's another SEC guy?
Who?
Christian Scott.
Sure is.
SEC Gator, difference, baby.
I'll say this before we get into Christian Scott, because I have a lot of stuff to say about Christian Scott. Florida Gators are the fakest SEC team in school, right? They're the least SEC.
No.
Who?
Missouri.
Okay, but they're not pure SEC. Like, they bounce around. They don't. This is like not their forever home.
Kentucky.
Like, I'm talking about pure SEC.
Kentucky, Vanderbilt.
No, but Kentucky's purebred SEC. Vanderbilt's also purebred university. Florida is so phony.
Nah, I'm not going to go there. I won't go there. The Gators are a real SEC team. I got to say that.
Well, we love the Gators on the Mets because we got Harrison Bader, we got Pete Alonso, and now we have my guy Christian Scott. And then I was very excited for this one. I can't wait for the next one. We can actually watch him on television. And I think it also is worth talking about right now that Blade, Christian Scott, Dom Hamill, Mike Vassell, all of them were part of the first round of roster cuts on Sunday that came through. And I think all that means is that those guys, as the Mets have said repeatedly, those guys are not part of the major league depth right now. Yeah. Like, those guys are not SP6. Those guys are not SP7. Even without Max Kranick, right now McGill's the 5, Lucchese's the 6, Budo's the 7. I think that's clear. Today's roster decisions make that apparent, and that's okay because I don't think there's a rush for these guys. And it's also compared to team like, just for an example, like the Yankees. Like, they kept Will Warren through the first round of cuts. They have a little less pitching depth. Like, he, because he's staying again, like, he's going to be SP7 now. But that's like the difference, I think, right now between Scott, Vassell, with the guys in this team. Like, everyone's going to be in the minor leagues to start, but I don't really think that's that bad of a thing either.
No, absolutely not. Like, I mean, a little more time in the pitching lab, cool with it. No problems at all.
Very cool. And again, fucking wish the Scott start was on television because some of the stuff looks so crazy. I was watching like the Marlins press angle and it was like, oh, there's a slider. There's a slider. Also, the guy who is just kind of funny on Mets Twitter, his name's Nathan. I think at Nathan NYM, Lindor or something. He did the cut up of that angle. He put every single Christian Scott pitch on Twitter. So you guys can check that out. But there's so much of this Christian Scott arsenal that it looks so much fucking fun. The fastball, the sweeper, and his little cutter gyro slider, all grayed out super well by Stuff Plus. All of them seemed like the Marlins couldn't really grasp them. I think gave up some hard contact and one run, but listening to Keith Rad on the radio, I was like, that looks good. That one looks good. And this fastball can be such a unicorn. I was talking about this in the Pitcher List Discord. If everyone reads Pitcher List, Discord is an amazing deal because just there's so many high-level baseball conversations happening all day. Kind of got me thinking about Mark, too, like maybe making a little messed up Discord or something.
If you guys want that, you let us know.
Let us know, because that might be something we get going before the season starts. But Christian Scott, the thing that makes his fastball so cool and unique and different and weird is that he comes from a very flat release angle, but it also has a three-quarters, which reminds me a lot of another guy the Mets used to have whose initials were ZW. But I don't want to compare anybody to anybody yet because I don't want to make someone think.
I'll say it. Zach Wheeler?
It looks like that in the mound. And maybe it's like the skinny guy with the scruff who's like kind of athletic but lanky, but he's coming from that three-quarter but also kind of like the kind of shallow. And it's just like it feels and looks like baby Wheeler. It's 95-96 instead of 98-99. That's the huge difference here. But especially now that he's doing that with two distinct sliders, like that feels – it all feels kind of similar to me. And just the way he throws, like that three-quarter right there, it comps really, really similar in terms of his horizontal release angle, his vertical release angle, his release height, his extension. The two guys who each have very good fastballs, but on different sides of Christian Scott's velocity. One's Tyler Molly, who before all his surgeries had a fastball that always graded out amazingly, and it even sat 92, 94, and it always got great results. And the other one, he's a reliever, but similar, Matt Brash, who has probably one of the most devastating fastballs in the league with a sweeper that matches it.
That slider's crazy.
It's insane, but Scott's kind of right in between those two guys, and the angles are also similar, and it's very rare for someone to have that flat of an angle while coming that far in three quarters. Not many guys in the league have it, and that's what makes Scott so interesting. Then he was also very sinker heavy in this, which we've heard he's moved away from his sinker towards the fastballs, like as he's gone through the Mets system. So I'm not sure if these are just mismarked fastballs or actual sinkers. I was talking to some guys on Twitter about it. That guy I talked about last time, MJD Analysis, who was just like, they were moving distinctly, but they weren't moving that differently from the four seams. So maybe they're just dead zone fastballs. I don't know. It's, again, spring training for Savant as well. But there's so much with those three pitches, the fastball, the cutter, the gyro, and the sweeper, that there's such a high ceiling on this guy. It's kind of stupid. Like, he didn't even really look that good. It seemed like he wasn't really commanding the zone super well. And he still had a 45% whiff rate and a 35% called swing strike rate in the Marlins in an inning and a half.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys are not watching the YouTube version of this, you should, because you can see James' face light up talking about Christian Scott. He gets excited about this guy. But like you said, there are just a lot of good things where the Mets haven't had a pitching prospect of this possible caliber in quite some time.
Yeah.
Since some of the guys that you just mentioned that he's pitching similarly to. So to be able to see it and know that this could be somebody that's coming through the organization is exciting. Again, we need to probably see him on a regular TV to like really get a feel for what these things are going to look like, because it's impossible to actually tell from that press angle from behind home plate in the press box 100 feet away. Yeah. But the stuff that you are able to see, the stuff that we can just look at and understand, like the 45% whiffs in the game, that's great. That's fantastic. Man.
And something else cool, again, we have these public stuff models and he grades like all these pitchers graded plus plus in every single one of them. And he threw one split change, which we heard is a pitch he's working on. And the one moves a lot. I don't know. I wanted to see him throw more. He threw exactly one. I was like, oh my God. It just moved a ton. It's the complete opposite direction of slider too, which is cool. But then the other thing about Scott, which is like trying to help me temper expectations, something I've read, I think in Eric Logenhagen, the prospect guy in Fangraphs, write up on him in the Mets recent prospect rankings on Fangraphs, is that he gets all this credit for this incredible command because these walk rates are insane. Lowest walk rate in the minor leagues, one of the best strikeout minus walk rates in the minor leagues. Just, and it seems like watching him now and seeing, I tweeted out, like the pitch illustrator that Savant puts out, where every pitch lands. This seems to me it's very much control over command, where it's like the stuff is so good that he's just throwing it into the zone because the guys probably can't hit it and there's so many weapons that they're not really going to know what's coming. But it's not command where it's like, I'm picking a corner, I'm picking a corner, I'm picking a corner, I'm picking a corner. I know exactly where it's going, which maybe that is like the next step of his development. Maybe that's how he gets to the next level, because maybe he just shouldn't be afraid to walk a few more guys. It's kind of like where George Kirby gets stuck in, or it's like the change sports, what Aaron Rodgers got stuck in for a while, where it's like, you have to throw some interceptions to really take enough chances to be good. You have to do that.
Can't be Brett Favre, but you gotta try and make a big play every once in a while. And
George Kirby's talked about this, where it's like he just doesn't want to walk guys ever. Cliff Lee used to do this too, where it's like once in a while you can throw some waste pitches and like see what they do. Everyone wants to be like Greg Maddux and never waste a pitch, get like 86 pitch complete games. But maybe there's something in between this control and command for Scott, or maybe this is just it. Maybe he just is a control over command guy. Maybe that knocks ceiling down a level, but it still looks like a really good package for a major league starter.
Totally, and we got to see some other guys as well, Mike Vassell. And would have loved to seen him on TV because we haven't seen a whole ton of him, but like he looked good as well. Like there's no real complaints from any of the stuff that we saw. Hard to have like the true breakdown of exactly what they did again because of that camera angle and because of what the availability was. But we're gonna see these guys again in spring, and it's just all building on like very, very good things that we've already heard about these guys.
Totally. And having Stack is cool because you can see how much these pitches are moving. And Vassell, it's a similar package right now to Scott. It seems like the Mets have kind of molded these guys in a similar way because he was also throwing a fastball, a cutter, or a gyro slider, and a sweeper. And Howie was talking about it on the broadcast because he actually talked about a story that made me quite upset. And I think I texted you about this, that last year sweepers took over baseball and it was a whole big thing. Sweeper this, sweeper that. And like, I think it was kind of mischaracterized at first, but now I think it's useful to distinguish them because sweepers and like these little tight sliders are different. So the fact they were in the same bucket, it's kind of hard to evaluate any of them. But he had a conversation with the former manager of the Mets, Buck Showalter, and they were lamenting the fact about this sweeper revolution, not wanting to call them sweepers. And that's like pretty endearing from like, you know, the older announcer who's been around the game for a long time. That's not very endearing from the guy in the dugout, especially when you have a lot of guys in the system, top level stuff. These guys are being taught these pitches. And then on the field level stuff, this guy's ignoring their existence. That made me really upset. But
what's a prospect?
Yeah, what's a prospect? Buck Showalter, baby. What if Francisco Lindor breaks his leg? Buck Showalter, messed up podcast.
I don't think Jeff McNeil's going to hit well this year. Oops.
I can't believe you said that on this show. It was unbelievable. But it's a similar package to Scott, I think with a little less lively of an arm. And he also comes a little more over the top. Last year, Fassel was throwing a curveball through the minors. I thought that pitch was doing well for him. Okay. But the new sweeper looks really good. So maybe it's just they just totally scrapped the curveball for the sweeper. Sweeper graded well. Fastball's fine. Cutter's fine. It's just, I think he's still good. He's a good oatmeal guy to have in your rotation. But I don't think he has the upside of Scott right now.
Yeah, totally. And I think we all knew that, though. Like maybe not all Mets fans, but I think me and you have always been talking about Vassell as like a major league starter, not a future ace by any means.
Yeah. Again, we're not saying Scott's a future ace. Like I think him just settling into being a good starter, we're just telling you
great.
The is there for things to happen here. Like
there's
some excitement. This could something crazy could happen with Christian Scott. Something crazy could not happen, but something crazy could happen.
Definitely. And then I feel like the last guy I talk about, just Paul Gervais, massive human being, throws weird, throws hard.
I love watching that guy throw. He has this weird release angle, also like very, very sidearmy.
It's also low. It's weird.
Yeah, it's low, but it's not fully down there. It's like in that, I feel like that's cool for the sinker, because even though he's a big guy, he's not throwing it and extending a lot. So the earlier he releases that, the more time that sinker has just bowling ball on these hitters. And he's almost throwing these sinkers and sliders in the exact same spot to both-handedness, just picking off these corners, and one goes in and one goes out. And it's just, he's fun. He's kind of cool. I like.
He's a reliever. He's a reliever for those.
Of course he's a reliever. Yeah. He's a fun one. He's an LSU guy too, SEC.
SEC, best conference in the country. All right, on the offensive side of things now, because we did a lot of pitching. Let's talk a little bit about hitting. I want to start it off with Brett Beatty. Having a bit of a rough spring, hasn't looked particularly great, but he did get his first home run, and he pulled the shit out of it, 112 miles per hour. Big stuff. That's the stuff that you go, motherfucker, there's Brett Beatty. That's the guy we've been waiting for. But then we have seen the rest of the at-bats this spring, and it's been a lot of striking out and lazy ground balls to second base. So it's like, is that because he is consciously trying to now like lift the ball, put the ball in the air, and this is just a byproduct of like that transition that he's trying to make? Or are we in trouble here a little bit? Like, I don't know.
He has talked about a lot in his media availability. That's like, there's such a pure emphasis right now on pulling these fly balls, like getting to that stuff, getting the pitch out in front, not letting it travel as much and doing it. So like, maybe that is, maybe there's just too many things in his head right now. I know him and Chavez have been working together a lot. I know he did a little talk with Beltran too about hitting, pulling fly balls and stuff, but nice to see him get one. He also hit all this guy, Rodri Munoz, on the Marlins, who stuff looked kind of wild. I think he had like 8 swings and misses in like the 2 innings he pitched. Yeah. Wasn't throwing super hard, but there was a lot of weird stuff going on. He looked pretty nice. Similar ilk, Vientos also with a home run off of Matthew Liberatore, who's like right in the sweet spot for the Mark Vientos home run. Nice little soft stuff on the outside and just smack it out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a strong guy. Like, we know he has the home run power, and it's just about actually making the contact with him. And Liberatore, who is very much a fringe major league pitcher, that's where Mark Vientos lives, that 4A level. He's going to dominate those guys for sure. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and we're in the spot right now where someone has to differentiate themselves for third base and opening day.
Yes.
Because I think Mendoza even made a comment that, like, it's like Brett's spot to lose, but it's like, it's not official. And, like, Joey Wendell hasn't played the second in spring training. I don't know where Joey Wendell is, but it'd be nice.
It's time traveling.
Yeah, it'd be nice if someone else could mix in there and maybe compete for this third base job. But it's just, there needs to be something. It needs to be a click. There needs to be a step. There's got to be some movement here to make it. You can't just hit 100 in spring training after hitting 100 last year and walk into opening day at your job. There has to be something happening. It's like, this is still a game. This is still competition. It has to be.
Yeah. One guy who has played well that we started to see get a little more consistent time. Starling Marte is looking pretty good. He's looking similar-ish to where he has been before. Like, he's running well, made that sick throw in the outfield that you told me about that I saw and was like, oh my God, that was an absolute seed. And that's the kind of stuff where we need Starling Marte to be. Like, just be that athletic, quick, good outfielder, being a menace on the base pass, that's his value to the team. He can be, like, impactful, without a doubt.
Totally. He hit the ball 110 miles an hour on Sunday. I think he hit another 105 on Friday. So it's like, he actually is hitting the ball hard. That was the big difference last year when he was doing awful, and the year before, where if you're going to hit the ball on the ground, please hit it hard. And like, that's what we need from Starling Marte. And also, there's like this kind of back and forth between Carlos Mendoza, where it's whether or not he's going to hit top of the order or not. And I really don't want him to. We've been talking about it a lot. I'd be so upset if he did. But there's like every day spring training so far, one of these things has happened every game they've played, Mets have played with the starters. Nimmo's either hit leadoff, Lindor's either hit 2, or Pete's hit 3. One of those things has been true. Every spring training game, the starters have been involved with the Mets. But with that, Marte's hit 1, Marte's hit 2, but in the days, the other guys aren't there. So I'm on such pins and needles for the first lineup that all 4 of them are in to see how it lines up. I would love for the Mets to go full heel, like bullshit analytics piss people off, and Starling Marte 4th.
You've been waiting for that for years.
I think that would be so funny, because I actually think it also, there's a way this actually lines up perfectly with the lineup, because Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, those three are so good, that should not be changed. The only way that should be changed is if they switch within themselves amongst the top. Maybe Lindor goes to 1 and Nimmo goes to 2 or something. Like, that's the only way I could conceive that changing. But after that, the lineup is pure chaos. And like, we love McNeil and the concept of him being a top of the order, but I just don't think that, and he's also hurt. We actually have not mentioned that at all. He was shut down with a bicep strain, so I really hope he's okay, our guy Jeff. But especially before you go down there, if he's going to be just stretching all day.
Of course. I'll keep an eye out. I'll keep an eye out on the weekend.
But there's this idea that it's kind of like Nimmo's your best on-base guy, Lindor, Peter, your best power guys, best gap-to-gap guys, and then Marte is just this contact menace. And like, I'd like that behind Pete in a way. Like, unless he sucks, like, but I don't know if he does right now. So
this is where I disagree with you. This is where like old school brain Mark comes in, is I can't get my head around like the speed guy hitting 4th. Like, I know what you're doing, because it's like, if you go 1-2-3, he's your second leadoff, like theoretically. But also, like, most pitchers have a whip above 1, which means someone's getting on base every inning. Sure. And then that means Starling Marte is hitting 4th. And I'm like,
but in terms of this entire team, who's the next guy you trust the most to get a hit with men on base or to put the ball in play?
I mean, you make a good point there. You make
this
a good
is what
point
I'm saying.
There.
Like, if he actually does settle back in at like that one.
Well, I know who I want hitting 4th.
Be Alvarez.
Francisco Alvarez. Or Honestly, if DJ Stewart's swinging the bat, I'll hit DJ Stewart fourth to get that lefty in there.
But the only thing about, yeah, with Stewart, the lefty thing makes sense, but that's Marte. Oh, Marte's righty. But like the thing with Alvarez's difference is, like, I still want him to grow into that. And I think there's still a way to grow into that. He's also been active on social media, guys. We haven't seen it.
Yeah.
He's posting duets with the Mets. He's posting duets with the fellows, Venezuelan baseball. Like, the train's leaving the station. He's becoming a superstar in front of our eyes. But there's something to me about this, like, hyper contact in that four spot with these three guys, these massive on base guys ahead of them, where I almost want less of the swing and miss from Alvarez. We're also like, if Marte just gets that hit there, like, now we're active on the base paths. Like, now things are happening, things are churning, and you get more contact guys behind him. Then you put Alvarez behind him, more feast or famine, but then you let Marte steal it back. I think the Mets lineup is really strange. I hope they don't fuck with this 1-2-3 of Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, because I think it could be perfect, but just because there's no obvious 4-5-6-7 in the lineup, so it winds up a little strange. But
well, there's no obvious four. I think you can, yeah, like, all the other guys,
Pete,
can
Pete's
be five,
an
six,
obvious
seven.
Four, but then there's, yeah, no obvious three.
Yeah, of course.
That's the problem. Yeah, he can only be one of them. He can't hit both. That'd be,
well,
cool,
the obvious three. You hit Marte two and Lindor hits three. Come on.
I think that would be a mistake, but I think there's a chance that does happen. But I want to see that first day these guys are on the lineup together that happens. Because another thing that we've been talking about, we're 36 minutes into nonsense right now, is pure minutia. We're talking, yeah, about how much I was excited to see who's going to be the backup center fielder on this team. And we got a glimpse of that on Sunday where who started the center field? Or it was Tyrone Taylor.
Yeah.
Tyrone Taylor started at center fielder while Nimmo started in left. I think that's a huge key into how this lineup could run in the season. Nimmo is just the left fielder now.
I got to tell you, I'm really liking Tyrone Taylor a lot. Like, he's a ball player, man. Like, he had a hit today against Urquidy, I think, like in the second or third inning, right up the middle. And it was just like pitch, good contact, hard up the middle.
Yeah.
It was a single, but I just like saw him like, fuck, that's good baseball. Like, that's just like, no, that's one of those things that like, Statcast and WRC Plus, and like, they can't account for, because it's just a relatively like normal mediocre play that happened. But when you see it, you're like, shit, that's so fucking pretty. Like, just you saw that 92 mile per hour fastball and said, fuck you, 180 feet up the middle. Like, I loved it.
And again, he does everything well. The Mets have kind of lacked this kind of player the last few years, where it's like well-rounded bench piece. He, yeah, hits for power, he hits for contact, he runs well, he plays good defense, he plays hard. Like, he's like a get-off-the-bus kind of guy, too, where it's
yeah,
I'm trying to get off the bus with Tyrone Taylor on my sports. I don't care what sport I'm playing. Like, I bet Tyrone Taylor could really mix it up in rec basketball. I bet he could play some touch football and be a really good outside receiver, maybe, yeah, even a quarterback. Like, he's just an athlete. This Mets team, again, has lacked these kind of bench athletes the last few years, because we've been cycling between J.D. Davis, who could do one thing, Daniel Vogelback, who could do one thing, Brandon Mark Vandals, who can only do one thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, Vargas is a good off-the-bus guy, too. I have to give it to him. He's an imposed athlete.
Yeah, big guy.
It's like, Tyrone Taylor can patrol center field. I'm like, I feel not that bad about it. We also haven't seen Bader yet. I don't know what's going on with Harrison Bader. Is it injuries or soreness?
I thought he played a little bit, didn't he?
I don't think we've seen him.
Has he not played yet? Why did I think he played a game? But I mean, like, we're also learning with Nimmo, like, starting late, it has nothing to do with an injury. He was just simply like, I don't need to play on February 22nd. I learned that last year. It's not important. And I'm cool with it. As long as Brandon Nimmo's healthy, I don't give a shit what he does.
That ball up to Miller from Tyrone Taylor, it was actually 105.
Okay, smoked it. There we go. Even better. He hit it hard.
Yeah, so it's all good stuff. I mean, for some fans this year, it might be a little hard to get excited. But if you love ball, like, this is a team that's going to be kind of hilarious and fun. It really is.
It's a baseball team right here. This is a baseball team that's going to be grinding. Yes. No, as the greatest coach in sports history has ever said, no days off with this Mets team.
Just going to try and just hit and play defense a little bit, pitch a little bit, kind of just piss you off and annoy you a little bit. And you said last night, I think that now we're going really off the rails. We got to end the show.
We'll end it here.
I'd love for the Mets to get in a fight this year.
The Mets need to get into three fights. You got to fight the Braves. They got to throw a fist at the Braves this year. Have to. There's got to be a fist thrown.
It's funny. Like, we're kind of kidding when we say this. We're being a little bit of assholes. But if you remember the beginning of the 2022 season, the way things really got rolling was some massive comebacks and then
Steve Cishek.
And then a huge fight.
Yeah, Steve Cishek thrown at Francisco Lindor's face.
It's just putting, like, kind of I feel like the league, and it's been open now the last few years, people love to target the Mets. Yes. People like to make fun of the Mets. People like to beat the Mets. People enjoy this. We have the richest owner in all of sports besides Ballmer in LA. So it's like, this is, we have something of a target on our backs, and we put targets on our backs. There was a post went viral this week about the Mets opening dance up their dance team. I don't know. As people who used to work for the team who don't anymore, and those people work for the team, that's probably a bit of a one-to-one there in a way. But the memes were fucking insane. And it's honestly a good idea. All the teams in Asia and Japan have these. They're like massive spectacles. And it's like, I think it's a fun thing. It's New York. It's urban. Like, it's a cool vibe to have a dance team and the baseball team. It's also cool doing it for new. But it's just the way it's being rolled out right now, you could probably use a little smoothing on the edges.
Yeah, maybe not for the 84 win team. Like
84 would be great. If we win 84, I'm happy as hell.
I know, but I'm saying like an 84 win team, it's like maybe we don't drop the dance team this year. Maybe we wait for, I don't know, if we pay Pete Alonso and get Juan Soto. Maybe we go, now we can get excited about this team.
But all the comments under was like, oh, this is what we did in lieu of starting pitching. Nice. Now I'm happy about that.
It's the dancers are making $275 a game, which we shout out to Alex for finding that online. We know what they're getting paid, $275 a game for 5 hours, not getting paid for practice. That's why we can't sign Jordan Montgomery, because
$200
Those $30,000 a year is really cutting back on the $25 million Jordan Montgomery wants.
No, and ending it with a little bit of baseball. Ryan Clifford had the hard hit ball in the Major League spring training game. He's still 20 years old. He's gonna start the year in Double A. Don't forget the name.
Bang. We'll see you in Binghamton, Ryan. All right, that's gonna be it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for watching. Make sure you follow us on all social media at MetsUp, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Subscribe to the MetsUp podcast YouTube channel to go see the video version. It's looking great. We've been doing a great job over there on YouTube, getting some big numbers, some interviews going out. We're beating those numbers out there with Tim Healy coming on the podcast. So shout out, Tim. We love you. Great episode. And make sure you're following us as well on the podcast feed, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever it is. Drop us a rating, drop us a review, download and subscribe. We do appreciate it. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Shiano.
And me at DraftNickMark with a C. We have a bunch of content coming out this week, so keep an eye out for it. A bunch of player previews coming at you. We got to play that algorithm game, so expect to see some shorter form episodes too. We hope you enjoy them. If you don't, too bad. They're still coming, so deal with it. And that's it. Thank you guys for watching. Catch you on the next episode. Peace out.
Peace out. See you guys next time.